Welcome to the Brian Beebe Half Hour Variety Hour. It's really 15 minutes of fun, music, and laughter stretched out into something much, much longer. And now, here's your host, Brian Beebe.
Cause you are my reason to live. All I own I would give just to have you adore me. Till the rivers flow upstream. Can you hear me? All right, man. This is Brian Beebe, once again, flying solo with this podcasting on madisontalks.com. We're streaming live on Facebook, sponsored once again by Monk's Bar and Grill. 6 locations in Wisconsin. Sorrento's Italian restaurant at the Wilderness. A beautiful, family-oriented Italian restaurant. Great pizza. Great music, by the way. They got a guy who plays 4 nights a week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at Sorrento at 7 o'clock. And you can eat right at the bar. You can have your dinner there. It's me, and I
just some
I apologize for keeping on doing that. I think it's funny, but it really isn't. It's me. I play, and I've been there 10, almost 11 years now. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at 7. You can come in and eat at the bar, listen to me, and eat your dinner, and come, and still be home in Madison by 9:30, 10 o'clock. So there's no excuse. You should be there. Do I have the keyboard? I don't have, just a little bit more. Man. Yeah. There it is. We need some contact cleaner on that pot you just turned.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah. Anyway, today we're going to talk about this Beatles channel on Sirius Radio has been talking about a 50-year anniversary of Sgt. Pepper. And it started making me think, boy, I just hope they don't do some sort of a cheesy tribute album with all these new artists doing these old classical songs. And it got me thinking about tribute albums in general. What do you think? The number here you can call in, 608-210-1667. Do tribute albums work for you? Do you like and who do they benefit the most? Is it the new artists that get on there to pay tribute to the classic old, old guys of rock and roll? Or is it the old guy that they pay tribute to who becomes a little bit more glorified by having all these modern artists say how much they love him?
Probably depends on how good the cover is.
Yeah. But my son, Joe, I talked to him about it last night, and he said a well-stated opinion. He says, as long as they stay in their own lane. Mm. Do you know what I mean? An artist that wants to cover a Tony Bennett song, for example, you know, they better be a singer, you know. I mean, it's not easy to pull some of those off with a real punky sort of a voice. I don't know. Staying in your own lane is not what tribute albums are kind of about. They seem to be whoever likes this particular song on the original album or the original singer. He gets to do whatever he feels like, you know. I mean, Kid Rock doing My Way by Sinatra. You know, that's just an example, but how does it work? How does a guy get assigned a track on a tribute album? I think I'm not far wrong in assuming that the original tribute album was Robert Stigwood and the Bee Gees doing Sergeant Pepper. Do you remember that? You're not old enough to remember that, Mike, but there was an original tribute album to Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and it was a movie, and it had the Bee Gees and a whole bunch of 70s artists, and this thing died big time. Who's on the phone?
Stevie Ray.
Stevie Ray Nelson. Hey, Stevie.
In the flesh. Hi.
Hey, man. I was thinking about you today. I was looking at that video of Bill Edwards Presents. It's about a 10-minute video about our show, this Sgt. Pepper Live in Vegas. In 2009, Cheap Trick did Sgt. Pepper Live with a bunch of other artists, and I was one of the background singers, and Stevie came out there, and I wrote it down, Stevie. At about 9 minutes and 20 seconds, near the end of this video, Robin walks over to the side of the stage that you were, I know that you were sitting on when you came out.
Yeah, that was for Carrie's, for my wife's birthday. We went to Vegas to see the show.
Yeah, did he kiss your wife?
He may have. It's been a few years. It happens to her, so I take it in stride.
Robin walked over to your side. I know where you were sitting.
And, he may and, have. And, I don't
and,
know. I don't remember.
Kissed this pretty girl, and it was just over in a second, but it sure looked like your wife.
I don't know.
You
I know we,
that,
we had a chance to say hello backstage to everybody, and I was as always wonderful to see Cheap Trick, and performance on that show was just second to none. I still have to say it after all this time, it still holds up, and I have my two cents to put in as far as this tribute so-called album.
Yeah.
Now this. Okay. Now
well,
I
don't know that they've made a tribute album, a 50-year anniversary thing for Sgt. Pepper, but I was kind of hoping that they wouldn't. You know what I mean?
I know, but I'm just talking about tribute albums in general.
Okay,
I think you opened the door for that one, yes?
Yeah, Stevie Ray Nelson, by the way, is a fabulous musician from up by Tomacose, Wisconsin. Is it Tomacose?
Not Tomahawk, not Wautoma.
Toma.
Toma, yeah.
Where the two roads split, where the where the interstate divides at Toma, Wisconsin, and he's but he's very connected to music in many ways, and he joins me at Sorrento's a lot. Go ahead, what were you going to say?
Well, does it help the young artists who are doing the tribute album, whatever it may be, or the old artist that it is that they're whose songs they're doing? I think it does both.
Yeah.
In that, here we are, we're paying homage to you, but this is as good as we're going to get.
Yeah.
this is your songs. This is your songs. They're fantastic songs, but we're not going to get any better than that.
Right.
But here we are in bringing our two cents into it, our take on these songs. Just, I don't know, last minute, that just seemed to be what it was to me.
So are you a fan of tribute albums?
10% of them.
Yeah, 10%. There's
lot of... I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
There was an Eagles... I think there was an Eagles tribute album that was out.
It sure was.
I don't think that was the reason that Vince Gill is joining the lineup for these two concerts coming up. But you could tell that there was some very, very good. I mean, somebody had to handpick these people to get in on this. I think Vince did. I can't tell you why, if I'm
and
not
then,
mistaken.
Oh, that's that would be great. Vince Gill singing I Can't Tell You Why would be good.
Yeah.
And then the last time you were on this show, Zeno was talking about Keith Urban doing a Bee Gees song. There must have been a Bee Gees tribute record here recently. But, I'm glad. I can't say that I'm a fan of these tribute albums, but I'm glad that they don't try to do the original song in the original way. You know, it's like they say, well, we can't really improve on Tony Bennett's version of this, so we'll do our own version of it. And contribute that in a way that we hope is respectful, you know, because they're not. They can't really do it as justice as a copy. You know, I'm saying this at the same time I'm thinking that you and I, when we play together, take pride in kind of doing these songs exactly like the records.
We try.
And I don't suppose we really should do it that way, but that's the way we've always done it.
There are two schools of thought in creating a tribute album or a cover album, let's say, whether you just do your own take on it, meaning that you just do it the way you do it, or you do it as note for note as possible.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that there's two schools of thought in there. So,
do you find...
do I like one over the other? I don't know.
Do tribute albums actually contain... versions that try to go note for note? I've never heard that.
Well, there have been a few.
Like on the duets? On the duets album.
I can't name anything right now.
To Tony Bennett's duets album, he's actually singing with these people. They're not doing them on their own. So in that case, they do come and follow the same arrangements as the original song. But I don't know, man. I don't think that they should... They should try to do them note for note. But anyway,
here's one that just sprang to mind. Nat King Cole and Natalie Cole.
Yeah.
I don't think this was from a tribute of any kind, but it was just something where the two of them, through the magic of recorded music, were able to bring together. And Natalie Cole singing with a previously recorded of Nat King, as some of you may have heard. And they're both singing the same part. There's a harmony part just waiting to be sung, but nobody's doing it. So I'm thinking to myself, well, one of you sing the lead and the other sing a harmony part. And I listened to the whole song. I'm like, unforgettable.
I think that's why
they're both singing the same note. Why are you doing this?
Unforgivable. You know. I know. I'm sure that they tried that. Maybe they tried a harmony part, but I think that they meant for that for her to really kind of echo her dad, don't you think? I mean, not add compliment. I didn't think there was anything particularly missing out of that. But I mean, I can hear you at home whenever you hear that singing an invented harmony part. I'm sure you do, just because it bothers you that much. I want to. Am I right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, okay, you're right.
There's Robin Zander kissing your wife. And I wanted to tell you that this is...
I got to ask her this now.
Yeah. There is a video. I mean, there's tons of videos of Cheap Trick doing Sgt. Pepper live. But there's one definitive one, and I'm in some of them, but I mean, there's one definitive one. It's called, and if you go on YouTube and you put in youtube.com/, and this is all lowercase, watch, WATCH, V equals IIPE 707. 336M, M as in Mary. You'll see a 10-minute montage of Bill Edwards Presents is the first thing that you see, and it's a presents Sgt. Pepper Live featuring Cheap Trick. And about 3 minutes and 50-some seconds in it, you'll see a great big blonde guy in a black suit. That's me singing back up. And I'm in it near the end, too, but it's really kind of a nice, nicely done tribute to this show. And I was only in, I was in 9 shows in 2009 out in Vegas. And they went on to do it some more in other parts of Las Vegas without me, which is... was okay by me, because whenever I go to Vegas, I go there with money and I leave there with a lot less.
Oh yeah,
even when I get paid, like they paid me every night for doing that show, but they made sure that the casino cage was okay in cashing those checks, and they paid us in a check, I could take it right to the casino cage and cash it and blow all the money. It wasn't good. But anyway, that's still good. So that, I'm glad you came out, man. And did you or did you not rent a Mustang convertible for us to cruise around Vegas in? Did you?
And get lost in Vegas? Yes. Yeah, yes, we did. We rented a convertible of some sort. I think it was like a Chrysler Sebring or something
maybe
like that.
Maybe it was,
but
yeah.
We couldn't get a Mustang, but, you know, well, we have, my wife has, my wife, a Mustang convertible, which
yeah.
I'm not allowed to even open the door.
And I remember,
I remember us getting lost in Las Vegas because parts of I-15
were torn up.
Along with the entrance and exit ramps.
Yeah.
So we said, where are we? And
this is the first time I'd ever tried to use GPS, and it constantly, at every block, every light we stopped at, it was said recalculating. Yeah, because it wanted us to get on that whatever you said it was, 15.
I-15,
and
yeah.
It was not, it was completely torn up, and we couldn't get on it. So eventually, I think you just turned this off because the lady recalculated so often. But that was kind of cool. It was a nice night for a convertible ride in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. It was a good time. And I was talking to my wife about that last night. And 2009? It's been, 9 years? Eight, 9 years?
Yes, hard to
already?
Believe. Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness.
Did you get to meet Jeff Emmerich?
I did, and you took our picture.
Yeah, okay.
In the casino, and I'm looking for that picture still.
Yeah. Jeff Emmerich was the original recording engineer, not producer, recording engineer. He turned the knobs on the 2 4-track tape decks that they used to record Sgt. Pepper. And he was the producer of our show out in Las Vegas. And I don't even know if I told you this, Stevie, but the first day we were there, the background singers were out there before anybody else, and we had 10 hours of rehearsal the first day. And I sat here, and Jeff Emmerich sat right here to my left as we worked on the harmony and background parts with the orchestra conductor and the 6 background singers. And he had laminated pages of notes that he had written out during the original recording of Sgt. Pepper, you know, so he wanted to make sure that we did our background parts as true and exact as we could to the Sgt. Pepper recording itself. And he didn't say this during that, but after we had done a few shows, he gave a newspaper interview or something, a TV interview, and said that he thought Cheap Trick's version of the Sgt. Pepper album made the Beatles' version sound like a demo. Do you remember him saying that?
I don't remember, but like I said, it's been a few years, and you may have told me that.
Yeah,
it sounds a little familiar.
They really rocked it. I remember that woke up, got out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. It's supposed to be a that part really rocked with Cheap Trick doing the woke up, got out of bed, and they really and fixing a hole and lovely Rita, they crushed it, didn't they?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful show. Standing ovations for every song, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, lots of them, and
yeah.
That was the dress rehearsal. At some point, Robin came up to the top of the set in the back there, and asked me to sing his part, double his part on being for the benefit of Mr. Kite, because it was one we hadn't done. He and I hadn't done, and you know the Beatles quite often would double their lead vocals and make it just sound that much thicker. So I said, I was honored, and I said, yeah, I'll double it. And about, the second or third show, It hadn't worked very well because Robin never sang it the same way twice, and I was having real trouble syncing my part up with his. And at that point, before the next show, Jeff Emmerich, the Beatles recording engineer, came up to the choir loft where the background singers were assembled and asked me not to sing. He has said it was just sounding too, you know, garbled and disjointed in the full mix out front. So I was asked to not sing by the Beatles sound engineer. So,
ouch.
Yeah. I got over it quickly. And then he also said, why don't you mouth the words anyway, so if Robin looks up here, and he'll at least think that you're still singing because he asked you to. So I was asked by the Beatles recording engineer to not sing but fake like I was. I think that's the...
And this memory you bring up, and you have thousands of other great ones, and you don't bring them. Way to go.
That's pretty funny when I told it at the Robin show a couple of years ago. Yeah, so that was fun. And those Beatles songs, you know, I thought we knew them because we were kids and had learned to play them, you know. But once you learn them with Jeff Emmerich sitting next to you, you don't realize that some of those background parts are much more involved than you thought they were when you were 12 years old, like I was.
Well, one thing I could have had in that situation was one of those spy cameras and just taken pictures onto microfilm of the laminated sheets.
Oh, that would
like
be neat.
They
yeah.
did in World War II, taking pictures of the secret enemy
plan. Yeah, why
plan
didn't I have? Yeah, I should have. Yeah, because it was.
Would have been something else. Yeah. Was he not the engineer? Correct me about this. Was he not there for all of their albums?
Yeah, I mean, and nearly all of them. I don't think he's credited on the later ones. I think it was mostly the, you know, he worked for EMI or Polyphone or one of those, you know, big. Recording studios and ended up, I don't know if he got credited, but he was well known as the recording knob twister on the first few albums for sure.
Okay.
Hey, let me ask you something, Stevie. I was gonna talk a little bit about cell phones in the bar and how they've kind of retooled how people communicate. And in bars and restaurants, cell phones. Now you're a performer. What are you seeing as a problem or an advantage to people being on their phones all the time in the bars when you're playing?
Well, I rather like it when they go do like you're doing on Facebook. You're live now, mm-hmm. and people can hear you and see you in the moment. It kind of takes away. Now, this happened to Peter Frampton, not comparing myself to him, but this happened. The first five songs, you can add, go nuts on your cell phones and put them away so that you don't lose out, you know, because all you're doing is just looking through the screen instead of looking at the stage.
Yeah.
But there is that. But I don't mind it.
So Frampton invited them all to take all the pictures they wanted at the beginning and then put the phones away?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, he gave like five songs worth and said, okay, put them away and enjoy the show. And just put the phone away and just don't mess with it. Just enjoy the show.
Yeah.
And that is a good idea. But there are folks that take video of when I'm doing my solo thing or when we've been performing too, which is coming up pretty soon. I know you'll be going to commercial break, so you hint, hint.
Yeah,
July 8th, is that correct?
July 8th, Stevie Ray will be joining me at Sorrento's. That's a Saturday night, and that should be that'd be the first time in months and months you've been
under the weather. I've been ill, so
and
I'm
haven't played much. So,
up.
But that's I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah,
we are going to break, but think about that. Here's another thing. I'm just going to leave you with this idea of on the cell phones. And I wrote a cell phone song about blue faces, you know, how people are, when you can tell they're on their phones because basically they're looking down at their laps and they're giggling. Do you know what I mean? You're sitting at the bar like this. They got their cell phone out, but they don't have it up here. They got it in their laps, and they're looking down, and they're smiling and giggling. You know, like, do you know how funny it looks when people sit there giggling at their lap? You know?
I think the funniest thing for me has always been when you have the Bluetooth earpiece in, and it looks like you're talking to yourself. I really do talk to myself, you know, or else my dog. My dog doesn't let on. He just lets everybody know that I'm talking to myself. But out in public, I try not to.
People walking by you talking to themselves.
You're on your cell phone, and, hello? Are you? Never mind.
And they're walking by you talking to themselves, and you don't see the phone. It's on the other side of their head or something, you know, and you're thinking, oh, okay. And you know what, Stevie? I don't see that happening as much as I used to. I think that somebody has decided that has an uncool factor that exceeds the helpfulness of that. You know what I mean? I don't think they sell so many of those now. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Is that a new thing that's is fading out already?
Well, when I was working for a short time at Radio Shack here in Tolma, and the owner of the store had the earpiece in to be able to have both hands free in order to take the orders and answer questions and look up things.
Yeah.
And I'd be talking to him and, wait a minute, oh, you're on the phone. Because I couldn't see the earpiece,
and
you had to be in the right side of the
That's the other thing that's wrong with them. It makes people, embarrassed and uncomfortable. Here's another thing I'll share with you about the phone, then we do have to go to break.
Okay.
I've noticed that, let's just say Friday night, I get there and the place is jammed, you know, Friday night. People are not on their phones when the place is jammed. But as soon as the energy starts to go down a little bit, let's say a few seats open up at the bar, maybe some tables of four get up, you know, whatever. That's when they come out and they start looking for their friends or their cocoon of whatever that phone provides for them. But it seems to me that when the place is packed and jumping, they all want to, the people are still social animals and they want to be part of that scene. They want to be making the scene. They don't want to be on their phones when it's jammed. So, and I know that's definitely a fact. You don't see them you come in there, now Saturday night when you come and play, we'll make a point of looking at that. If the place is jammed, they won't be on their phones.
Yeah, you don't want to miss anything.
Yeah, you want to be part of the scene. Anyway, man, thanks for calling in. I've got to sell something. Brian Beebe's show brought to you by Monks and Sorrentos and on MadisonTalks.com. We're talking about the tribute albums, Sgt. Pepper's 50th anniversary. We're talking about cell phones in the bars, and I wouldn't mind talking about podcasts in just a little bit. So stick with us. Call in. It's 210-1667.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com. stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Cell phones in the bars. There's a lot. I was hoping my son, Rob, would call in because he gave me some information on a place down by him that, you know, and I've heard about these tech-free zones that are popping up. Then these executives go to lunch in Los Angeles. They quite often will put their phones in a basket in the middle of the table and turn them off or whatever, turn them on or whatever. But if anybody that gets a phone call that they have to pick up during lunch, then they have to buy lunch. And this place down in St. Petersburg that my son was talking about is a restaurant where you put your give your phones to whomever, one person at the table, or put them in a basket, and then if anybody gets a phone call, anybody uses their phone during dinner, if everybody can go without using their phone for the whole dinner, then they get 20% off their check.
Nice.
Yeah, it is nice, and it causes people to talk and have conversations. And I think that'll pop up more and more as people kind of... people are social animals, and I think they're going to realize that they need each other. They need an opportunity to meet a stranger sometimes. Where in a bar or a restaurant nowadays, you sit down, let's just say there's a handful of people at the bar. In the old days, you'd have to maybe say hello. At least look at them, say hello, smile. Maybe a conversation would ensue. Nowadays, everybody, all five of those people, will be on their phone in their own cocoon and never have to meet. They never have to meet a stranger on a bus,
blinders,
at a bus stop, in a grocery store, or anywhere that they might have met a person in years gone by. They don't have to anymore because of the curtain that just drops over them with these phones. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that people will need to make adjustments here, and I think maybe tech-free zones will be the beginning of it. Somebody on the phone?
Stevie's hanging with us.
Oh, Stevie's still there? Hey, Stevie.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
What about this? You used to be in radio. What do you think about the podcasting craze? I was going to talk a little bit about how the my having met Mitch Henk and the guys here at Madison Talks and starting to do this podcast thing that I'm doing has really kind of changed my life. And do you know anything about podcasting, or is your experience all radio, or what?
It's very similar. I mean, radio and podcasting are very similar in that you can do that in, well, the studio. Like I said, you're live right now on Facebook, and people can see that it looks like a radio studio there, and you could have that, or you can just have an iPhone and just do what you want to do. But the First Amendment thing, you know, freedom of speech. Anybody could have their own radio station. I think it's, I really do.
I remember you when you were in radio. You did your show.
I mean, I just kind of taking a break from it. I'd like to, you know.
You were did your radio show from your home and sent all your. I mean, they told you what songs were going to play on this radio station, and you sent all the intros and the break things that you said and the trivia things and the weather and stuff from your home, didn't you?
Yeah, well, in the radio world, they call it voice tracking.
You called it in over the phone.
I sent it to their server.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, at the transmitter. Now, there was a live studio there, and I did frequently do the morning show live in it was the station in Adams Friendship.
Yeah,
and has changed hands since the time when I was working there, but it's a nice studio, and it was easier for everybody and more economical because I already had the same equipment there for the most part. And I said, "Well, here, let's do this,"
And I'm sure a lot of places, a lot of radio stations are doing that. So you can have a live person talking in between songs like that. That was the Bee Gees with so-and-so from this album and whatever. And it gave me a chance to stretch out a little bit. And you were
doing it on, I thought you used to make fun of your own equipment a little bit, saying you were doing it on Windows 7 or something, weren't you?
Windows, at the time it was, yeah.
Windows 7?
And you could easily. Yeah, at the time I was using Windows XP. Well, it was,
no, that was
2000,
before.
What, 4?
Yeah. Before
XP. 2011. It was 7 years I was with that station, but prior to that, you had to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be there, and you had to be on time. And, well, I can do that, but this was so much better. But he had a lot of places, voice tracking and that.
Yeah.
So that you're able to have subscribers to, you know, to people that want your voice and want your program. I had done a little five-minute blurb called Why Do We Say That? Having to do, you know, the different
language, right?
Different things in the English language and where they came from and what they meant and stuff like that. I did that for like 7 years, just on this little piece of it. And I thought, wow, I should have that as, you know.
Yeah, you should.
Amazing. I mean, still do that as a show. I don't. I'd like to.
A little syndicated thing, right?
From that.
Yeah. Why not? And give us an example of some of that you used to. You got one that.
Oh,
remember?
Yeah. I always have one or two
euphemisms.
Cutting Through the Red Tape was the first one that I had done.
Yeah.
When the king or the lord of the area would have an official proclamation, they would have the seal around the document, roll it up, and then put the seal and tie it up with red tape so that you would see it was from royal lineage or whatever. And then when you would cut it, to unroll it and say, hear ye, here's what's going on, y'all. So, and then...
Cutting through the red tape was
to eliminate all that stuff.
Yeah. Hey, do you ever get up early enough on Sunday morning to listen to a PBS show called Away with Words? They do.
I love this show.
I do too.
I love the show. And it came along after I was doing that, and I don't want anybody to think that I ripped it off because I didn't know about it at the time.
Martha Barnett and Grant something or other, and they explore different ways that people, expressions that they use, and where the origins of words kind of, and it's really kind of, if you're into language like I am.
Yeah, and away different dialects with, and different,
words.
Different ways of saying things.
Yeah.
They really get it. They delve into it like
and
for
people
an hour.
Call
it's a
in.
Great show. I love it.
People call in and ask about things that their grandma used to say and where did that ever come from, and they research it, and it's really cool. Hey, should we do a Sergeant Pepper?
I hear the piano hammers, but I can't hear the piano.
You can't picture yourself in a boat on a river. I read the news today, boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. You can hear me singing. That I was told, and I don't think this is so, but I heard a story that said Paul McCartney, this one, the Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, and was so impressed that he figured that the Beatles had to really do something special in order to one-up them, and the Beatles were on top of the game. They needed to one-up the Beach Boys. They couldn't let those silly surfer guys come up with an album that was cooler than something they could do. So they needed to do something special, and Paul had an idea that they maybe should become another band and write songs for this other band, and that's how Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was decided upon, and he went ahead and wrote a whole bunch of songs and said to John Lennon, you better get busy and write something or you're not going to be on this record. And John Lennon did "I Read the News Today" kind of helped the record a lot, you know?
Yeah, I'd heard of the song, yeah.
Yeah, and he actually did for the benefit of Mr. Kite, too, but he kind of took all those words directly from old circus posters. Being for the benefit of Mr. Kite, the Hendersons will all be there. Of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz, and all that stuff is right from old historic circus posters. And he wrote it into a song lyric. And then George Harrison had, we were talking about the space between us all. And the rest of it was basically all Paul. It was really an interesting story that I, you know, there's Billy Shears is actually a reference to William Campbell, the guy in Scotland that they found who was a lookalike to Paul McCartney after he was killed in a car accident and sheared off the top of his head. Billy Shears, get it? It's part of the Paul McCartney is dead mystery. But that's not what I was going to tell you. They wrote that song, Little Help from My Friends, for Ringo to sing. And they wrote it intentionally with a melody that only goes four or five notes in any direction. Ringo has a nice voice, but he doesn't go real high or real low, you know? So it goes like, what would you think if I sang out of key? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Just a few notes, right? Lend me your... And then when it needs to go a little higher, the rest of the Beatles sing, Do you need anybody? And then Ringo sings, I want somebody to love. You know, right in his wheelhouse. Could it be anybody? I need somebody to love.
The first five notes of the scale, I think, is all.
Yeah.
It's right there. Da, 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 da. Yeah, it's right in there.
What do I do when my love is away? Yeah, right in there. That's a five. Right in the first five notes. You're right. And he did Octopus's Garden, too. Yeah. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. That was out in Abbey Road, but same deal. You know.
Yeah,
could be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. Let us in, knows where we've been. But it's cool stuff, man. And it's really neat that they knew he was supposed to sing a song or two on each record, you know. You and I used to do, I've been told, it must be in the D, I've been told when a boy gets a girl, they take a trip around the world, hey. Hey, that's Ringo singing that, and how come you say you do when you don't? Say you will, honey, when you won't. Let me know, honey, how you feel. Tell the truth now, is love real? Honey, don't. It must be lower because that's actually kind of, that's where he sings it though, and it is an E, isn't it, Stevie?
Yeah, it is. I sing it. I do that occasionally. That song.
You do it what?
It's E. I do that song. It is an E. Well, at least when I do it, I play an E.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Ringo sings it in E too. Might be a D or a C. How come you say you will when you won't? Say you do, honey. What? No, it's definitely an E.
Oh, some of the live concerts, they've been changing the keys, but yeah, you're right. It's within a certain group of notes in that scale, and that's where it was.
Ringo had the biggest success as a solo artist after the Beatles broke up of any of them at first. Remember?
I still like Photograph. That's still my favorite.
Got to pay your dues if you wanna sing the blues, and you know it don't come easy. You don't have to shout or leap about, and you know it don't come easy. That was the first one. And then there was Come On Like a Dream, Peaches and Cream, this? What was the Oh No No song? You sing that, don't you?
Yeah.
No. I don't smoke it no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. Is that what it's at?
Yeah, no thank you, please. It only makes me sneeze. Yeah. And it makes it hard to find the door.
Yeah. The No No song, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no, I don't drink it no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. Yeah. And he had a whole bunch of them, man. They were both good. Back Off, Boogaloo, and the one you just said. What was it?
Photograph.
All I got is a photograph, and I realize it's not coming back anymore. Yeah. That was a big one. I wonder who produced those records. Were they George Martin?
Well, I wish I could answer that.
Yeah, they were big sounding.
I didn't want to bet it was. At least one of them.
Yeah. He couldn't take sides. How could he take sides and say, okay, yeah, I'll produce your record, Paul, but I can't. I'm sorry, Ringo. Sorry, George, I can't produce yours. You know. But Paul McCartney started right out producing his own. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just another day. It's just another day. And then John Lennon and Paul McCartney were insulting each other in their song lyrics for a while. Do you remember that?
No. I should remember them, but I don't.
The very first John Lennon album, he's going, "So Sergeant Pepper took you by surprise. You should have learned something in all those years. Yeah. The sound you make is music to my ears." Remember that? "You should have learned something in all those years." And the hook of the song was, "Oh, how do you sleep at night?" Remember that one, Stevie?
I was listening more of Paul McCartney than it was John after the Beatles.
"How do you sleep at night?" Yeah, I know. They were totally divergent at that point. And I think that's what caused the breakup of the Beatles, is that John was really, he was embarrassed about doing things like Obla-di, Obla-da. Do you know what I mean? He wanted to do I Want You, She's So Heavy, and some of these, Don't Let Me Down, which is just, "Don't let me down." We can really, it's nothing much to it, you know. But it wasn't playful like Obla-di, Obla-da, life goes on, right? Tell her how your life goes on. That's not what John wanted at all. So I think he was embarrassed by some of the stuff that Paul was writing, you know. And he was getting support for those feelings from his artist girlfriend, Yoko Ono. I don't think that she broke up the Beatles, to tell you the truth. She wasn't the Black Widow. I read her books, and I understand her art. She was an avant-garde artist, you know, and she saw that in John, but she didn't. She was a Beatles fan. She wanted the band.
Yeah, well, that was fans. I'm not going to say it was fake news, but it was just something that the fans
don't say
made
fake
up that it was her, you know, because they wanted to blame somebody, so they blamed Yoko.
Well,
after all was said and done, that's pretty much how it went down.
Yeah, and they, because John was changing for sure, and she would accompany him everywhere. They were a one person, and when he brought her to the studio, everybody was a little less than loose and free and comfortable with playing and creating and stuff because she was there. Then nobody had ever been in the studio as a guest before. You know, studios, they'd had studio musicians a lot of times, but nobody had just been there hanging out. And yeah, they did begin to blame her. So, yeah, she's a... But she's not a... She wasn't the Black Widow that that everybody thought she was. So, hey, man, we're gonna move on here. Got to go to break again one more time and maybe hit the restroom this time.
Yeah, well, I'll take this opportunity to ring off, and always good talking with you.
You
and
know what? You are a Beatles expert, man. You really are. And you and I could talk about them forever, and I think we've just kind of taken. What about a good? Have you got a quick joke before you ring off?
Oh, okay. The first ultimate senior moment.
Okay.
Now that we're kind of moving on, all of us.
Yeah.
Hopefully, all of us are kind of moving on in years. Picture, if you will, two dinosaurs sitting near the shore.
Okay.
And off in the distance is the ark. Way off in the distance is the ark. And then one dinosaur looks at the other one and says, "Oh man, was that thing today?"
That's what happened to the dinosaurs?
That was the ultimate senior moment, the first one ever, yeah.
Yeah, because they would have been on that boat with the other
They
animals.
Would not know. It's a man who missed it. Yeah, yeah. That's it.
I like it, man. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we'll see you, man.
All right.
Brian Beebe, brought to you by Monk's Bar and Grill. Six locations in Wisconsin and Sorrento's Italian restaurant at the Wilderness up in Wisconsin Dells. Doing our thing on Madison Talks. You can see this program on Facebook anytime you want to dig up my Tuesdays on my Facebook page, or share it with your friends. That would be even better for me. And if you just want to hear the audio, you can go to madisontalks.com anytime, 24/7, and look under Brian Beebe, and you can hear what we've been talking about today. All right? Be right back.
MadisonTalkers.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to madisontalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with madisontalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit madisontalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit madisontalks.com. madisontalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Show my name during his show. Let's see. Are we there? Are we back? Hello? Hey, man. I was going to throw a couple jokes at you. And look at this. First page of the jokes, condom jokes. No, we don't want to do that. I told you, so many of these, I've used these so many times. And there's no, I've done all the musician jokes. What, 3 minutes? 3 minutes to go? What? Really? I don't understand the signal. Anyway.
We're 3 minutes to out.
Really? We started at 3:30.
It's 50, yeah.
Oh, it's it's almost 4:30 now. Ha! Huh.
Flies by.
Yeah, what the hell did I talk about the whole time? Hey, I wanted to talk to you. Mitch Hank is on the phone. We got 3 minutes. I want to talk to you about what somebody was asking me last night, how this all got started. Oh, I was doing an interview with a newspaper thing, but and I said, well, when Bunny Carlos mentioned my name in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame acceptance speeches last year in April, which is a year ago now, all of a sudden I got hooked up with Mitch Hank and iHeartRadio, and I did a couple of interviews on Mitch Hank's show. And then he started doing MadisonTalks.com, and it's the podcasting thing, and he asked me to give it a try. And so I came down here with not much in the way of a plan and started talking. I said, how am I going to talk for an hour about anything? And I did it a couple times, and I said, well, you know, this might be something. And I kept on going. And all of a sudden, we started streaming live on Facebook, and a lot more people got to see it and hear it. And it's been really, really fun for me and really interesting and challenging. And Mitch Hank, is Mitch still on the phone? Hey, Mitch, are you there?
I'm here. You are a Wisconsin treasure.
I'm talking about your mentoring and the big break you gave me with Madison Talks here. And a chance to find some new things about myself. At my age, it's hard to say, well, yeah, I'm doing something brand new, you know, because you've done everything. You've done a lot of things in a life like mine. And there isn't much chance to modernize and go on and do anything. But you have allowed that to happen for me, sir.
Well, we're on the frontier of digital radio, of internet radio, and you are a treasure for Wisconsin, like Vince Lombardi or Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers.
Now I can tell you're not taking it serious, and I'm giving you a nice compliment,
you have tremendous talent,
blowing
you're a great
it off.
Tenor.
Can you talk for just a moment about this other thing that you do, the story of your life? I think that's a real valuable service. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the podcasting, but I ran out of time because I think people should do this. I think there's a lot of people that I know. I think my friend Ed Legg is going to do it from the newspaper, but
sure.
Other people should come up here, down here to Madison, and do one of these shows. And and lots of people should take advantage of this service, the story of your life.
Well, thanks, Brian. It's just a chance for people who are a little older to talk about their lives and reflect on long life. And do a video with pictures or video or whatever the case may be, and Mike puts it together magically.
It's an interview. You interview them, right? About
an interview,
their life.
or they just talk with me, smiling at them. And if they're that talented, which we saw with Wayne Harris, former owner of about six McDonald's, now 6A Marketing, great guy, and then we put the video and pictures in there, and then put it in a DVD. Or a flash drive, whatever, and we give it to the kids or grandkids so they can play it for years to come, even after their loved one has passed. And I think it's a great concept. I think, you know, a lot of us would like to hear our parents' voices again after they're gone. I know I like to
hear my
mother's voice.
And Christmas, they could still be at the table with you. It'd still be part of your celebration. But how do people do it? How do they set it up?
Well, I think really just, you know, you can email our email here at MadisonTalks.com, or, in fact, my email, Mitch@MitchHank.com, and we can just negotiate directly.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch@MitchHank.com, and or just go to the website, MadisonTalks.com, and follow your nose that way. But it's really kind of a direct contact, personal, word-of-mouth type thing. But thanks for mentioning it. That was very nice of you.
Yeah. And do you have a quick joke for us before Mike shuts everything off? Oh, well, by the way, your show is following this one at 5.
Yeah. At 5 o'clock, we're coming up. But I don't know. The ones I would tell wouldn't be clean enough. I would just say that I'm a bad lover. I found a peeping Tom. He was booing me.
Oh, no. A peeping Tom? And yeah. So what is the show about today, man?
Well, we're going to talk about Paul Sandlin, the mayor of Madison, who may run for governor. I mean, 72 years old, former anti-war activist, definitely a progressive his whole life. And he wants to run against Scott Walker in the governor's race, which certainly would not lack entertainment value.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about that.
Some
of the Trump stuff of late. He's tweeting so much, he's starting to make his staffers angry and nervous, and we'll get into that. So, never a dull moment.
Well,
also,
fun.
Talk about money, how to handle your money with a financial planner who's pretty smart. And then, of course, Nick Chiarkas, who wrote a novel about murder in New York in the 50s, will be in with his publisher, and he's really good. Former New York cop, worked Woodstock.
Fun. Well, okay, man. Well, we'll stick around and see and listen to some of that.
Okay, buddy. Good job. You were a true talent. You really are.
Brian Beebe on the Mitch Hank program. No, the Brian Beebe on MadisonTalks.com. Brought to you once again by our friends at the fabulous Monk's Bar and Grill, where you always get a good time and always get a good meal. And Sorrento's at the Wilderness, Italian restaurant. Come on up to the Dells and listen to me play sometime. 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock, 4 nights a week. You can't go wrong. Mike Brockenfeld, our tech guru, runs all the stuff. Thank you for calling in, and we'll talk to you soon.